11 o'clock hour of Wilde and Tausch, which will feature a visit from Gabe Neitzel of Jen, Gabe, and Chewy on ESPN Milwaukee, scheduled to appear coming up in our next segment. Jesse and Tausch today, Jason on assignment. He is back tomorrow when our band is back together at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin's Brookfield location. Stop on out all day long, but especially between 9 and noon when we're there. Say hi and take advantage of everything that Pella has going on tomorrow. Our poll question for the day, our resetting our top story of the day, Jacob Mizorowski with an electrifying performance last night at American Family Field. 6 innings, 1 run. It was the leadoff home run hit by Shohei Ohtani. 12 strikeouts to 1 walk. He outduels Clayton Kershaw, and Miz stock continues to rise. So our poll question on the Wilde and Tausch Twitter feed at Wilde and Tausch, courtesy of Tausch. If given the opportunity to get one autograph right now, are you picking Brewers phenom Jacob Mizorowski or any current Packers player? That includes Jordan Love. Tausch, have you reviewed the voting before I tell you where it stands at this juncture?
I have not. No, I have not looked at it.
Where do you think this poll is?
I'm going to say it's like 60% Miz. That's what I would guess.
68% the Miz.
Yeah.
To 32% current Packers player.
You think that's just palming?
Well, do you think you're just palming? Because you're the one who said this originally, and I would have said yes, but now it looks
like
fans
voted for Jordan. I would have voted for Jordan Love. So no. I'm not palming. I think we're all excited. There's hype. There's a lot of electricity about what's happening, because it's unique and because he is just shot out of a cannon, and it's just woo, wow, it's exciting to watch. But there are still, we still want to, as Passan said on Monday, hey man, this was his fifth start. It's awesome. I want you to be excited about it. I'm going to be excited about it, but let's see a little bit more.
Jose Quintana goes on the mound for the Brewers today, trying to get the sweep of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Brewers enter play today 2.5 games back of the Cubs for the top spot in the National League Central Division standings. Did you see this incredible stat from last night's game? I mean, there's a lot of Miz stats that we could throw at you, but the stat about the average velocity for the 4 Brewers pitchers, have you seen that one yet?
I have not, no.
All right, so this is from Kurt Hogg, who covers the Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Brewers pitchers last night, Jacob Mizorowski, Jared Koenig, Abner Uribe, and Trevor McGill, those were the 4 pitchers used last night, averaged 99.34 miles per hour on their fastballs. So all 4 pitchers combined averaged 99.34 miles per hour on their fastballs. That's the highest average fastball velocity in any single game by a team in the pitch tracking era, which goes back to 2008. And it's hard to, you know, pitchers have only started throwing faster. So it's hard to believe anyone before 2008 would have done better than the Brewers did. So basically the fastest throwing set of pitchers start to finish in any game in baseball history can be assumed was last night at American Family Field.
It's impressive, and I know, you know, really good hitters can hit really good fastballs, but I thought last night some of the game that I watched, they're talking, you know, Rock and Levo were kind of discussing, because I actually watched the local broadcast because I respect the localness of things more than Jesse Bandwagon guy.
I respect the localness too. BA was on the call on TBS.
I love BA. BA's awesome.
That was Miz's national TV debut. I wanted to see what it sounded like. Felt like a playoff game watching it on TBS.
You don't count MLB Network as national TV?
Not when it, well, like they're on MLB Network today, but I think it's going to be leveraging.
So Apple TV is national too, then, right?
Apple
so
is yeah. But no, yeah, MLB sure. TV, a lot it's of times all... they just use the feeds from the local state. So, like, I think Levering and Rock are going to have the call on MLB TV today if they're the two calling the game. Like, it's going to be that. It's not like they're bringing in Costas to do the game or whoever they bring in to do
Thank
those.
Thank goodness.
Like, Smuggy McGee.
Yeah. Sorry,
Smug Bob.
Again, you're throwing.
Anyways,
at me for
I don't
no
remember.
Reason. You were trying to make a point. You needed to derail your own point just to throw something at
I
me
didn't
for watching
it. You
TBS
and Hunter
last
did.
Night.
And I don't even know what the heck. No, now I know what I was thinking. So I thought one of the really interesting parts of this, and listen, there is nothing harder in athletics than to hit great pitching. That is the hardest job. You could say tennis. There's all of these sports are very difficult, no question, at the highest level. But trying to hit a 102-mile-an-hour fastball when you have a 92-mile-an-hour curveball, and then I don't know what he throws his changeup, but when you have that variance, and Rock was saying it's like a flutter of the eye. Like you have to, it's that quick. And then the camera zoomed in. It was really good. It was great work by the crew there. That, to me, when you can have that level of speed, power, and make it that much more difficult on hitters, you got to be a big boy hitter. And there are. Shohei showed it. But it just makes that margin of error so slim. And that's why you want these guys throwing that hard. Then the question is, how long can you do that? And then what do you do if you have that drop in velo? There's a lot of questions. But, man, you always take that and try and figure it out. And the beautiful part is for Miz, like Murph said last night, he's just getting started trying to figure it out. You saw him messing around with the curveball, and he, obviously gave up a couple. I know Mookie hit a bomb that just landed, just fell into the, it was caught out in dead center. But, man, it's impressive, and the fact that the Brewers have this many big-time arms, again, I think goes back to the Matt Arnoldness of this and understanding it, seeing it, and then bringing it and letting the coaches work with it. It's been fun to watch.
Gabe Neitzel's been there for a couple of performances for the Miz at American Family Field, and he also was at the State of the Packers show at Summerfest on Saturday, where he shared his insights on Jaden Reed's status in the Packers offense. Tausch has wanted to talk to him all week. We will talk to him coming up next. But first, Tausch has to tell us about Quick Trip. Not many quick trips to the mound last night for the Brewers. They were making quick work of the Los Angeles Dodgers. We love our friends at Quick Trip.
Really nice job. This summer, are you ready to climb to the top? Well, we hope the Brewers are. We hope the Packers are. We hope all of our favorite teams are. And Quick Trip has a fun little deal here with the Mountain Dew Quick Climb. Every sip gets you closer to the summit. From now till August 17th, play every day for free right in the Quick Rewards app, and you can score bonus plays with every eligible item that you grab, like an ice cold Pepsi, bold Mountain Dew, hydrating Gatorade or Propel, and many more. Pairs up with the hot food, and you can earn two bonus plays. Every week, the cash prize climbs by $5,000, stacking higher and higher until one player reaches that top prize of $250,000. Get climbing now in the Quick Rewards app. Get it moving. And your summer, your climb, your win. No purchase is necessary. You can see everything at quicktrip.com. You can also go ahead and get 99 cents a loaf for Quick White Bread. You got 73% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound. Shredded hash browns, a buck net, all of the great stuff that Quick Trip has to offer, and they always have great deals. Don't forget to download the Quick Rewards app to take advantage of everything that Quick Trip has to offer. Quick Trip, we'll see you next time.
Gabe Neitzel of Jen, Gabe, and Chewy on ESPN Milwaukee joins us next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
So even though Jason's not here today, I will speak for him for a moment. When Tausch says something around here that he wants to talk to somebody or he wants something, we usually do all we can to make it happen. Would you agree with that, old T? We take good care of you? No.
What do you want me to say?
He's not going to agree. Yeah. I want you to say, yeah, Jesse, you do.
I think you guys do a great job.
That'd be nice.
I do think you do a lot of really good things. You do. You don't book guests. That's just not one of the things you do.
So when
is that fair?
He got passing this week.
That's not true at all. I booked you a guest when I wasn't even on the show.
Passing has been passing's great. You're right. Hunter booked him because he was on that.
He
day.
Did not.
It comes back to who's on when you're there. Hunter booked him. Hunter called him to get him on the show, right? Jesse, I got to give you credit. Your Jeff Passan relationship is awesome. And we love having him on.
Perhaps I should have started this segment differently, come to think of it. Joining us now, someone who Tausch wanted to talk to earlier this week when he heard what he had to say on the State of the Packers special at Summerfest, which you can find on the Green and Gold Fix podcast on the ESPN Wisconsin app, Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. He was talking about Jaden Reed, and Tausch wants to talk to him about what he said about Jaden Reed. It is the host of Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, weekday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Gabe Neitzel joins us on Wildy and Tausch. Gabe, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, boys. How are you?
I was better until I got slammed in that intro into the segment here from Tausch. So we got that going for
you.
Now it's a slam.
I don't know if he slammed you. I mean, I think you kind of walked in and set that one up for yourself, Jesse. That was. I think you got no one to blame but yourself on this one.
You too, really?
And I compliment. It's the Jason Wildy. You slam and then compliment, and then try to get info from that person. Mm-hmm. Gabe, you've been posting your videos on The Miz. Have you, and I know you guys talked a bunch about rookies and the debuts, but if you're right now sitting there at a golf course and The Miz and Jordan Love come up and you can get one autograph, who are you going to have sign your golf ball?
I think I'm going with The Miz. I think, and again, if we're talking about value, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Jordan Love obviously has done some things, but I don't think there's ever been this much excitement for Jordan Love, has there? Like, there's been some anticipation. There's, hey, I hope this guy ends up to be pretty good. Hey, I think this guy's pretty good. Whereas Miz is doing things, and Jordan Love has been good. But when Jacob Mizgorowski is doing things that people in the 100-plus year history of Major League Baseball have never done before, these are the types of things he's doing through five starts in the big leagues. Like, that to me is, yeah, that's worth, hey, could you sign this for me, Miz?
Mm-hmm. Is this the most excited you've been as a Brewers fan in fill in the blank? How long?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about this. I mean, obviously when the Ryan Braun, Prince Fielder era, like when that all happened, that was pretty exciting because the Brewers at that point hadn't been very good. And there was this thought of, hey, there are these really good young players that are coming through. And I would throw Ricky Weeks in there just because he was the number one overall pick. And while he didn't have as good of a career as Braun and Fielder, there was still a lot of excitement when he made his way. So I would say since then, since the mid-2000s, when those guys, that group, that core of players were making their way, because, again, you knew they were coming, you were excited for it, and then they ended up delivering. Braun obviously won a Rookie of the Year, and I think Miz, as long as he keeps this up, he's going to be the National League Rookie of the Year as well. I mean, there was so much excitement when it happened because, I mean, he just kept getting better and better in the minor leagues, you know, throwing triple digits consistently down there. Okay, does that translate to the big leagues? And as we have seen through five starts, especially that Dodger lineup, like that lineup, one of the best lineups in all of baseball, to go through and strike them out 12 times yesterday, like, yeah, that's everybody should be going to every Jacob Mizorowski game they possibly can for the rest of the season.
Only comparable to CeCe Sabathia is what Tausch and I have kind of landed on here throughout this show today. That's the only other time I feel like you circle the start and you're like, I got to see that guy. When's the next time he's on the mound?
Because you don't know what he's going to do. Like, he could be something, you know, and I know he didn't have the great start. And for him to pounce back after having his worst start in the majors against the Dodgers, striking out 12, going up against the future Hall of Famer in Kershaw, like, you just don't know. So it's an event. It should be an event in Milwaukee every time the Miz pitches because something special could be happening on the mound and you don't want to miss. It was the same thing, to your point, it was the same thing for CeCe Sabathia. Like, CeCe was on no-hit watch, I feel like, for the entire time he was in Milwaukee. The second he started pitching in a Brewers uniform, it's like, oh, well, I mean, we got to go to the ballpark today. CeCe could throw a no-hitter. And while he never did and only got really close to one time, you saw something special every time that dude was on the mound.
Gabe, do you agree with what Jeff Passan said on our show on Monday, that the Brewers are just one big old bat away from being a legitimate World Series contender?
I kind of feel it. I mean, you take a look at the rotation now, and there's still more help that could be coming on the way if you know, they suffer any sort of injuries, because of some of the other arm. I mean, Chad Patrick just got sent down. I know people didn't necessarily love him, but he's still a 3.51 ERA for a rookie, so that's pretty good. You know, Nestor Cortez is still potentially coming. The bullpen is stacked. You have arms down there. Yeah, I would say one big-time bat. I mean, Christian Yelich has been fantastic, but if you can balance that out a little bit more with another, you know, really good stick in the middle of that lineup, and I'm talking about like a heavy hitter, guy, some guy who's just a threat to hit a home run, because as much as I love the way the bottom of that lineup has been producing, whether it's been Durbin, Ortiz when he hasn't been in the doghouse with his manager. I mean, even Andrew Vaughn hitting a home run right away. If they had, you know, another big-time bat to kind of pair in the middle of that lineup with Churio and Yelich, that would be one of the more feared lineups in the National League, without a doubt.
Gabe Neitzel, ESPN right, Gabe. Milwaukee, so, joins us on Wildy and Tausch. Sorry, Tausch, take it from here.
All right, Gabe. So we had, I thought, your take on the Jaden Reed at the State of the Packers show with Jason and with Strophy down at the Summerfest on Saturday. It was really interesting. And then who was our caller yesterday that rebutted a little bit? I was literally like a pendulum yesterday thinking, oh, this is great. What a great point by Gabe. And then it swung back because, you know, stats can be misleading.
It was Keith in Heartland yesterday. Yeah.
Keith, stats can tell a narrative of what you want that stats to tell. And your point on the snap count and the 5 out of 6 games where Wicks ended up with more reps and the Jaden Reed, you know, all of the stuff that the snap percentage, 62%, comparing it to Jordan Addison and the other number two wide receivers and where that ranked. But I thought the point that Keith brought up yesterday was really good, and I don't know how much you looked into that as you were doing your notes for the show, but a lot of that was when they were running the football, and last year Green Bay ran the football a lot. Did you account for that, and did that change your mind at all if you kind of realized that a lot of that was from two tight end sets or two wideouts?
Yeah, I mean, he barely played. I mean, again, so Jaden Reed, for those who happen to miss it, 63% of the snaps. That's all Jaden Reed played last year. And he basically did not play when they went to just two wide receivers, two tight ends, which I'm anticipating more of this year. Are you not, with a healthy Luke Musgrave? And, oh, by the way, they went out and got Aaron Banks, who's an okay pass blocker, but he's a road grader. So I don't think the Packers, even though they ran the ball and were able to make that change a year ago and kind of shift and go, hey, we're now going to be a running team and be one of the few that actually runs it more than we pass it. Based on going out and getting Banks, based on the way they talk about Josh Jacobs, like, I don't think that that's suddenly going to change. And if they don't trust Jaden Reed out there in blocking situations, like, when are you going to get most of your play action passing? Successful play action passing? Probably when you're in two tight end sets. And if he's not going to be out there for those, like, clearly the coaching staff doesn't look at this guy as a potential star. They look at him as a gadget player. Seems too harsh, because I think he's better than just a gadget player, but he's almost someone they almost exclusively use out of the slot. And if you're going to be a top-end wide receiver in this league, you can't just be a slot guy. You have to be able to play on the outside. You have to be able to move around. And based on the way the Packers have used him the last 2 years, they don't view him that way. I mean, the fact that he's never played 80% of the snaps in any game tells me the Packers, for him to be as productive as he's been, playing as little snaps as he has, is also impressive, but also tells me that, hey, this coaching staff thinks that this guy has a ceiling because they only use him in a specific situation.
And I'll say this, I had not looked at it that way, and that's why I thought your point was so interesting. And then you compound that with the fact that they basically drafted a guy that does very similar things, at least that's the thought, in Savion Williams with their third-round pick. That also gives pause to your point on how the coaches and that front office feels about Jaden Reed. Now, I know there's a lot of uncertainty and guys' contracts coming up and you always want to get good value, and they could just really like Savion Williams and say he could, but he is looked at as a jet sweep guy, more of a slot guy. And did that factor into any of your hypothesizing about Jaden Reed and how this coaching staff feels about him?
Yeah, and again, especially when it comes to the Packers, Tausch, I look at, okay, what are they doing versus what are they saying? And I think that whether that's
LaFleur
talking,
no doubt,
whether that's Brian Gutekunst talking, like, okay, how do they actually – so that's why I thought it was interesting when I started diving into those snap counts. And look, I mean, leading the team last year was Romeo Doubs at 77%. which again still doesn't even touch what the other number twos in the division were doing, and that goes to, you know, the number of wide receivers they're trying to get a look for and kind of rotate guys in, like, you know, obviously Dontayvion Wicks and Christian Watson and things like that. But yeah, if Savion Williams is going to be the jet sweep guy, and that's going to take touches away from Jaden Reed, and Matthew Golden might be taking snaps away from other guys, including Jaden Reed, because I think the ultimate hope is that Matthew Golden becomes this chess piece you can move around and play out of the slot, play on the outside, kind of like Davante Adams used to when, you know, back when he was here a handful of years ago. I think that's going to only lead to more opportunities being taken away from Jaden Reed. He hasn't stepped up and shown, hey, I can be this outside guy. I can beat press man coverage. Those are the things that teams have done to really slow him down. And again, through 2 years, I just don't see what he is going to be able to do, especially now with the wide receiver room being more crowded, to separate himself if he's only being used in very specific situations. He's been good in those specific situations, but if the Packers run more two tight end sets, my guess is we're going to see a less productive year this year from Jaden Reed than we did last year.
Talking to Gabe Neitzel, Jen, Gabe, and Chewy on ESPN Milwaukee. Also hosted the State of the Packers show on Saturday at Summerfest with Jason Wilde and Alex Strope, which you can find the full podcast of on the ESPN Wisconsin app and the Green and Gold Fix podcast feed. Gabe, Tausch and I did this little exercise in the 10 o'clock hour of our show today where we did a little like word association. First thing you think of when you say all the different Packers wide receivers. If I just say, who do you think of most favorably in the Packers wide receiver room right now, who have the most positive vibes about when you think of just on the surface, gut instinct, who do you feel good about right now?
This might be the cop-out answer, but Matthew Golden. And a lot of that is because we haven't seen him, so we don't know what the warts are. But we've seen at least 2 years of everybody else, and we kind of know where the shortcomings are, right? Like, oh, Dontayvion Wicks, he can get open. Turns out catching the ball is kind of an important part of that position. So he needs to continue to work on that. Jaden Reed, I think of, oh, okay, he struggled against the man coverage. Romeo Doubs, well, he's good at catching in a crowd because he's always in a crowd, and Christian Watson right now is hurt. So I think the excitement, and because of the just the physical tools that Golden possesses, the speed, he's got the agility, they trusted him on kick and punt returns, so you know he's got good moves in space. All of that is what you're looking for that true number one wide receiver. And I know Matt LaFleur, oh, I barf at that, or whatever he said, you know, when it came to having a number one wide receiver. But the fact of the matter is most effective offenses in this league have a guy that they're relying on play in and play out to be out there on the field. And for me, that's why I'm excited about Matthew Golden, because I think he can be that guy. I think everybody else, at least through, you know, their first minimum 2 years in the league, have shown enough holes of why they can't be a number one receiver, and maybe they're better suited being a two or a three.
And last one for you, Gabe. What stood out most to you from hosting the State of the Packers show with Jason and Strofe on Saturday? Of all the besides wide receiver, since that's been the heavy chunk of our conversation here, besides wide receiver, what's
Just wait. Are you going to ask Gabe for an example? Because, man, Wilde was so mad at me when I asked Gabe. He said Gabe was awesome. Like, Gabe was so insightful. And I said, oh, that's great. Give me an example. And he goes, what do you mean, give me an example?
There were so many.
What do you mean, what do
things.
I mean?
There were so much.
It's not that hard. So I don't want to put our guests in a tough spot where you ask for an example of anything.
So, Gabe, is
there any observation?
Yes.
If you don't have any, that's okay, too.
It's not what was Jason so good at on Saturday. It's what stood out most to you from the show is how I presented that. Yeah.
I think I feel better about the Packers cornerback situation than most other people, including Wilde and Strofe, because I know there's been some hand-wringing about, you know, the whole Jair Alexander thing. And look, if I had my way, like, Jair Alexander would have been on this team. But clearly Gutekunst and LaFleur were done and they wanted to move on. But that was obviously the plan all along. And when you take a look at their top three cornerbacks, I think it's upgraded from where they were at the end of last season when Jair was out, because I think Nate Hobbs, based on the contract he got, is better than Eric Stokes, based on the contract that Eric Stokes eventually signed. So I at the end of the year last year, I didn't look as the quarterbacks as a problem. Could they have been a little bit better? Yeah, but I don't recall just going, oh, man, lost that game because of the corners. That's such a big issue right now for this team. I'm sure a lot of people like to have a little bit more depth, because after you get past those top three, there are a lot of question marks. And I'm guessing if you look around the league, after you get through the top three quarterbacks of just about any team, there's going to be a lot of question marks. Teams just need a lot of corners, and it's tough to find them. It's a really hard job to do. So I feel pretty good about where the Packers' corners sit right now. Again, if there's an injury, you know, then there are more question marks, although they've got the safeties that they like to drop down into the slot the way they did with Javon Bullard last year. So maybe they feel a little bit better about their depth that way, or, you know, the way that Isaiah Simmons was able to play in the slot at times in his past. So I feel better about their corners than I think most other people do. But based on the schedule, based on the division, well, I guess we'll find out if I'm wrong in my confidence in that position.
Gabe Neitzel, ESPN Milwaukee, Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, weekday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. You also hear him on ESPN Radio all the time on the nights and the weekends. Gabe, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, and hopefully you get to enjoy another Brewers victory like the rest of us hope to do so this afternoon.
Sweeping the Dodgers? How much fun does that sound like? That sounds like so much fun. They should probably just do that. That'd be fun.
Thanks, Gabe.
Real fun.
See you, boys.
Gabe Neitzel. Tausch, you ask, and we deliver for you. Gabe Neitzel.
Yeah, I just love the fact Jaden Reed. You know, Gabe thinks through his points and, you know, obviously brought some really interesting thoughts in how you view things. I had never viewed Jaden Reed as maybe – I have always looked at him as dependable, as somebody the coaches really appreciate, and I still think they do, but – it always does come back to what you do, not what you say. And we hear all this stuff. The fact that he has played in as few of snaps, there are reasons for that. But is he kind of, you know, pigeonholed a little bit? I don't know. But I do know this. There is going to be fierce competition for reps. And with the emergence of Tucker Kraft in this running game, it's going to get tougher and tougher if you can't do everything. And maybe this was the push to say, we need more from you in the run game. I don't know what his blocking grades are. I have not delved into that. But I would guess if you're not out there on run plays, it's because you're not as good as the Heaths and the other guys, and everybody's got to find their role. But it's going to be tougher and tougher to get reps. If you're going to start seeing more 12 personnel with two backs or with two tight ends, it's going to be more and more difficult to get out on the field. And if you're not on the field, you're not going to produce. And if you don't produce and then you have Drew Rosenhaus go in, it just becomes one big goofy cycle.
Hunter Vaughn takes over Woe Nelly for the final time this week. He's had an interesting week in this segment. We'll see what he has in store for us next. Hunter takes over Woe Nelly. Next, it's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
Willie and Tausch back with you. Jesse and Tausch today. Jason rejoins us tomorrow after a couple of well-deserved days off. Continues the writing at channel3000.com, the top 20 most important Packers of 2025. Check out the latest entry, Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs, available at channel3000.com. Let's now turn the show over to Hunter Vaughn for the final time this week. He leads us in Whoa, Hunter!
If the topic is good, the guys discuss.
Just the other morning, I had breakfast at Tracy Sirocco's house. His mama brought out 15 flapjacks. He said, mama, take back 5 of them flapjacks. I gotta stay hungry for the Crimson Tide.
But if it's not, the show must go on. It's time for...
Whoa, Nelly!
On Wildy and Tausch.
All right, guys, I don't have any stories about going to dinner or movies with my mother-in-law anymore.
Aww.
I know. I'm sorry. But I saw this on Twitter, and even though it's my Dallas Cowboys' biggest rival, really happy about this for the Washington Commanders. I've got the image up on the video stream right now, but they're going from the weird, like, gradient numbers and the single stripe helmet back to basically the old Washington Redskins color scheme and uniform, just with the block W on it now. So I don't know about you guys, but going back to the old school look is the right move for Washington, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'll be honest with you. I just don't get that excited about uniform stuff. It's just not.
You're not a uniform guy?
No, I'm not. I think it looks better, and I do think, like, the powder blues with the old San Diego Chargers still the best jersey, in my opinion. I think when you start getting all this, it listen, man, I'm getting old. I get it. It's not for me. All this Oregon, the Oregonization of uniforms, I don't like it. But you know who does? Kids, players, fans, money-making. So I ain't going to hate on it. I get it. Doesn't mean I had to like it. I could give two rips about it, but if I had a pick, yeah, I'd go with the old school on this.
I guess my only thought on it, looks good. My only thought on it is I thought they were intentionally trying to distance themselves from the old look of the franchise. I didn't think they wanted to go back to anything that they had done before. So that's the only thing that surprises me about this from them. Looks good. I just thought they were trying to, you know, rebrand, not rely on the nostalgia.
My guess is, like Tausch said, with the money making, they weren't making as much money on the merch and the jersey sales as they had hoped. So go back to it. Now people will buy these current ones.
I also, my dad is a very wise man. He once was an usher at American Family Field. I don't know if you knew that. He pointed out to me how the Brewers. And then I've noticed it with sports franchises in many of the other sports. And, you know, not the traditional, the Cowboys, the Steelers, the Packers don't do a lot with this. But the teams that are up and coming, the Brewers have done this, the Tampa Bay Rays, the Commanders you see here. When a team goes or starts to play well and kind of has this resurgence and suddenly there's more fans who are hopping on the bandwagon and want to buy the merchandise and, you know, Jaden Daniels is selling jerseys and everybody's got their Terry McLaurin from the last couple of years, then they rebrand right in the middle of that success. And the Commanders, I wonder if they had this planned for a few years from now and they decided to expedite the process since they got so good, made it to the NFC Championship last year. They said, well, let's sell some more merchandise now. Let's boost those sales this year. People are, you know, buying their stuff. They just bought up all those jerseys and the merch last year. Now let's change it up a little bit. Then everybody's going to go buy it again.
Probably. Oh, that's just...
Whoa, yeah. Nelly!
Watch for that. Watch the next time. You know who's going to do it? The Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh,
the Toronto Blue Jays have had the same logo for a while. They changed it when they went and they started winning in like the 2010s with Joey Bautista. Watch what they do. If they're good again, watch for a logo rebrand. And that's going to prove my point.
One quick one. Had brought this up in the office yesterday to Jesse, at least wanted to bring it to you, Tausch. I have a little bit of a Brewers hot take. I think the Barrel Man mascot...
Matt Murphy should get fired?
No, I'm not an idiot.
Nobody'd be that stupid.
Never said that.
Nobody'd be that dumb.
But I think the Barrel Man mascot is a better mascot than Bernie the Brewer.
All right. So first of all...
Okay, explain.
It's not Bernie the Brewer. It's Bernie Brewer.
Whatever.
That's his name.
Again, why Barrel Man is better. I think he's just a cooler look. It's more unique. And I think he is a better mascot and should be the primary mascot for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Terrible.
Oh. Jesse, what do you think?
Bernie Brewer has history in being a real person who sat up there until the Brewers ended a losing streak, and then he slid down from the roof of Old County Stadium. That's where Bernie Brewer was born.
Barrel Man's better.
Yeah, and you know what? Thanks to watching the game on TBS last night, I have a great take for you. When Sal Frelick hit his home run, TBS instantly panned over to Bernie Brewer going down the slide. There is no other team in Major League Baseball that has a home run tradition built into their stadium as cool.
Barrelman could go down the slide.
No, Bernie Brewer going down the slide. He get up with the yellow mustache.
They'd be rolling out the barrel. Flag.
No, it is iconic. Bernie Brewer going down the slide. And when he does that someday, when we end up winning a World Series, that's going to be an image that will last forever. Bernie Brewer is the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, Bob Uecker is the Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah. Bernie Brewer's up there, though. He's top five.
Barrel man rolling out the barrel on a home run would work, too.
I normally am not like super intrigued by mascots. Like, it's just not.
I'm over.
I love in-game features.
I think bringing
fans enjoyment during downtime is good. And I always see Barrel Man floating around in that first concourse. He's meeting fans. He's got a bobblehead. I'm sure Bernie does too. And in Hunter's defense here, how do you make beer?
In a barrel.
This is the Brewers, right?
Yeah.
In a barrel, right? And you smoke. You can do all kinds of different things, but you preserve it in a barrel. This team is built on brewing beer. That is the name of their team, the Brewers. I don't know if Bernie, is he out in his garage making a concoction of some fun beer? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
what he does up in the chalets. He's always brewing stuff up there. Yeah.
Is he rolling out barrels?
Because
you have a half barrel, you got a quarter barrel. I get where Hunter is coming from on this. I do.
Barrel Man is in a good spot. He is the vice president to Bernie Brewer's president. And that is a perfectly fine spot for Barrel Man to live.
He's Spiro Agnew.
He never has to become the man. He can be the guy behind the guy. Yes, Barrel Man is the Spiro Agnew of Bernie Brewer's presidency. Yes. Absolutely. Thank you. I'm glad we landed in a good spot there.
Whoa, Nelly!
I'm out of time, so that's all I've got
all
for
right.
you guys.
That's it for Whoa, Hunter. We will wrap up the show. Take a look at our poll returns, as those of you who are heading over to American Family Field hope to see a Brewers sweep of the L.A. Dodgers this afternoon. Check the poll returns on The Miz. Coming up next, it's Wilde and Tausch.
This is our crew.
Swing and a miss. He struck him out. It's a dozen for the Miz. We are watching a video game right now at American Family Field.
Madison's new home for Milwaukee Brewers baseball. 100.5 ESPN.
Pleasant Prairie gets the final word on the ESPN Wisconsin Carbless ESPN Wisconsin talk and text line today. Barrel Man not better than Bernie Brewer. His frown is scary to the little kids.
Most
Kevin.
Mascots are scary
Pleasant
to little
Prairie.
Kids.
There was a story where I went to college at Bradley in Peoria, Illinois. They had the Peoria Rivermen, and they had this big like captain of a boat who was their original mascot, and the kids would all go up and they'd still run away in tears, and it took them like a year before they realized they had to go to this big funny blue bear looking guy to be their new mascot, because that was more welcoming because he's warm and fuzzy for the kids to go up and give a hug to and take pictures with. So Barrel Man could be a little scary. He's like the older kids. The younger kids love Bernie Brewer. The older kids can like Barrel Man. It's okay. Barrel Man knows his place. He's number two to Bernie. As long as everybody knows that, we're good.
Nah. I want Barrel Man.
That's the final thing Hunter Vaughn will say, filling in as our cousin sub of the day producing this week. Riley Yauch takes us the rest of the way. Tomorrow, Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, Brookfield Experience Center. Stop on out. We'll be there 9 to noon. All of ESPN Wisconsin and our Milwaukee stations will be there from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tausch, we riding together tomorrow, or are you on your own?
We'll have to figure that out. We'll figure that piece of it out, but I would probably say no.
Can't wait to report back. Plus, Jason Wilde returns tomorrow at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin in Brookfield. We will see you there at 9 a.m. tomorrow. As Jason always says, have a great day. Take care. Be good.
Miss any of today's episode of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? Commercial-free full show podcasts are available free on the ESPN Wisconsin app.